I love it. Like, I love, sorry, Miriam.
No, no,
we're
you
also
go.
Excited
no,
in this
no,
episode.
You go first.
No, you, please.
No, no, after you.
I no, think no. we're like, we're excited to talk about this because we've never interrupted each other so much on an episode. I think we're just like, and this.
We've hit our place. The telly.
The TV.
The telly.
And crumpets.
TV. TV and crumpets.
Oh, at the same time. Now, that would be a win. Life
I mean,
goals.
I, that's all I do. That's basically my life.
Rabbiting on. Rabbiting on.
Welcome back to Rabbiting On. It's so lovely to be back again with my wonderful colleagues, Rabbis Miriam and Robin. How are you both doing?
All good, thank you. Nice to see you.
So we're going to be talking this week about Jews on telly and maybe some films. So before we get to that, I would love to know what is the best bit of TV that you've been watching this year. I know that this is kind of dark, wet time of year. And for me personally, TV is often something that lifts me up out of the gloom, especially sort of Strictly season and things like that, all the glitter. But now we're past that. What should I be watching, Miriam?
Well, it's interesting. We do, well, Johnny and I do a lot of kind of crime, drama, politics-y stuff. And the problem is actually the blurring of reality versus kind of, you know, the new. I watch a lot of the news as well. And sometimes I find the blurring is all a bit much for me to cope with. I loved The Diplomat, mostly because she was a really great, like, feisty woman, kind of taking on the world and cutting through all of that masculine toxicity, that one, behind the scenes. And, you know, that all playing out at the same time as all this disgusting Epstein stuff really just makes you go, is this too far from the truth? I'm not sure it is. It's, yeah, it gets a bit worrying sometimes.
Wow, interesting. How about you, Robin?
Well, I feel very seen because I am not highbrow at all. I'm a massive TV addict. Like, I watch a lot. I found it a really good way to unwind, but I do not watch anything that is like gritty or political because I want to watch things that are portraying people that who I want to be friends with. So I've been watching Banjo Beal and Rose, the Great Island Hotel. They've been renovating a hotel in Ulva off the Isle of Mull in Scotland. Love that because I want to be best friends with both of them. Death in Paradise, which is a really fun like murder mystery thing. So I kind of watch stuff like that and Gogglebox and the Great British Pottery Throwdown because I want to be friends with them all and I think it's fun. So that's the kind of TV that I watch. But yeah, so I feel very embarrassed because I have a very low brow.
Don't be embarrassed. It's good to unwind in front of the telly. Yeah.
And actually, I think there's a great benefit.
No, you should not be embarrassed.
It's great.
I've only just discovered the Great Pottery Throwdown and I feel like people were keeping a secret from me
because
this is peak Debbie Telly. It's like crafty. You get to know people and you really like them. It's like those people you want to be mates with. People cry, grown men cry over clay quite regularly. And I don't understand why no one told me about this before January. I've just started
it. Oh,
I'm
sorry.
And I love
it. Yeah. We've got a little rabbinic drag chat WhatsApp, which is actually not only rabbinic, it's actually got lots of other non-rabbinic people in. They actually were the only rabbis in
it. It should be Jew drag chat.
Drag chat, but maybe we should have a Jew pottery chat. As well.
Ooh,
we could fold
like
it
that.
In.
We should point out Miriam has no idea
RuPaul.
About drag. She's looking very confused.
We watch really different stuff on TV. It's okay. And we can still be friends, which is really important to have diversity in your friendship.
I don't know. At some point, you might have to get we might have to induct you because RuPaul UK versus the world is also what Debbie and I are watching together at distance. So at some point, you might have to just get folded into it, I think.
But interestingly, this time of the year, Strictly has finished and it does kind of get replaced for me by Drag Race, but it's not just UK versus the world. I've just discovered a new season of Australian Drag Race that iPlayer didn't tell me it was there. And if you subscribe to sort of streaming services, there's a new American drag series as well that's out. So all my lone telly time is watching, catching up on drag because the sparkle and the glitter and the drama just sort of takes you out of the grey, rainy yuckiness outside.
And it's always. Do you guys watch Married at First Sight?
I did a bit. I never got that into it.
Okay, that I'd never seen. And then I was so excited when one of its producers asked me when I was officiating at a wedding whether I'd come and be one of the experts. And I was like, this is it. This is my moment. I was so excited. And I came home and I told Johnny. And Johnny was like, you know, you can't do that. It will ruin your reputation and your career. It would be terrible. And I was like, what do you mean? As he started pulling up all of these articles about these, you know, poor vicars who'd been in exactly that situation, and then there were their parishes were somewhat worried about what they really thought of the institution of marriage and stuff like that. So I was like,
okay, you'd be all right. You'd get up in my reputation, so that's probably all that matters.
But I love it when TV does reflect kind of what we're going through, but in a totally fantasy way. Relating to what you were saying, Miriam, that kind of grittiness. I started watching Grey's Anatomy in lockdown in 2020. And obviously it started about 15 years before that. And I never noticed it for some reason. And then about 2 or 3 years ago, having plugged away and plugged away, like Gary had given up Yonks before because he just got bored with the length of it, it reached the season where COVID happened. And watching this hospital depicting COVID, having started watching it in COVID, I was very emotional, and it kind of revisited all that horror that we lived through, but in a sort of safe, distant way, but also a very close way, because you fall in love with these characters and you get to know these characters. And I kind of love that sense of processing through the fiction that you can go through. And quite often Grey's Anatomy deals with really gritty kind of matters of the moment, Black Lives Matter, and currently dealing with all the kind of abortion laws, anti-trans laws, and all the stuff that's happening in the States. And how do medical professionals respond to all that? But of course, you know, on TV, once they start playing a bit of klezmer, that the Jews are coming, which is a little bit annoying if you're not Ashkenazi.
Like our theme tune.
Yes, the clarinets and violins are out. The Jews are coming on TV.
So what happens when I walk into Waitrose as well? It all just starts playing. There's like, you know, the rabbi's in town. So
We've obviously not got to klezmer level rabbinate yet. We need to work up to that. So do you guys have favourite TV Jews? Or most hated TV Jews, perhaps.
I love Phil of Somebody Feed Phil. Do you know him?
I
love him.
Oh my God.
It's quite
painful
watching him eat quite as much trafe.
And so much trafe. I mean, he eats so much trafe that I'm like, oh, you know. But especially.
Well, he just is so Jewish.
And it's so real.
And before his parents died, I loved that he had them on at the end of the episode. And he was just like, oh, well, I can even make content just with my daily phone home and like catch my parents up on my work day. And it was just such a real relationship and such a lovely kind of a way of being able to take a little bit of that thing of this feels really comfortable because you could know him, right? You could have a chat with him at Kiddush, although I'm not sure he'd be too impressed with the or the fish balls. but there's that lovely piece around So Jewish. And actually, you know, I love an episode if we're going on holiday to a place he's been. Mm-hmm. We always watch the episode first, only to find that 3/4 of the things we can't eat because it's trafe.
And I suppose there's that sense of connecting to reality, right? This is an actual documentary of someone's travels and where they go. But of course, there's that flip side of when we're fictionalized and how are we represented when it's not real? What do we get presented to the world? You know, in the 90s, we had Ross and Monica, who I feel like were the archetypal Jews alongside Seinfeld. And it was all very American, really. Although I was a bit obsessed in the 90s with Rabbi Greg. Did you guys see Keeping the Faith, which was a film? It's like an interfaith
dialogue. That was mine and Johnny's, like, that was our first date kind of thing of like, it was basically, I need you to watch this film. It's my favourite film. If you get me, like, and it was like a bit of a test really early on. Like, is he going to get this? And he thought it was funny. And I was like, oh, yes, this could be it.
That's interesting. My version of that was Dogma. I don't know if you've seen Dogma. But also a religious theme. How about you, Robin? Have you got kind of favourite TV Jews?
Well, I'm definitely going to nick Miriam's. I'd forgotten about Somebody Feed Phil, which is interesting because it's funny what we think of as like who's Jewish. Like, as in, I watched that and he's super Jewish. And I love it because I feel like I know him already. And it lifts up the best of Jewish culture of like humor and food and family. Like, I love it when he eats something that, like, he's in this like incredibly fancy restaurant on his 16th course and he goes, not so terrible. It really makes me giggle every time. That New York Jewish lilt. It's funny, I hadn't thought about it because I just like love the program, and I don't know if that says something. The thing that I watched recently as the opposite of that was the film Marty Supreme. I don't know if you've seen it. It's about a Jewish ping pong player.
I've seen it advertised. I haven't yet seen it.
Does this
it.
Count? Because it's not TV. Who knows what TV is anyway? As I'm a millennial, apparently, I got told earlier this month. So TV, streaming, social media. Marty Supreme's about a New York ping pong champion and apparently based on a real life story. And I was going expecting... I didn't look at the trailers, like the comedy, the kind of culture stuff that I loved about Somebody Feed Phil. And instead, it was... hardcore. There was a lot of anti-Semitism. There was some really intense and I found really uncomfortable Holocaust stuff. In fact, the actor Timothy Chalamet is Jewish. I looked it up after because it made a difference to how I could like process the film. And apparently one of the director or producer also was Jewish. So that did make me, I don't know, feel better. We can maybe unpack that. I don't know. But I found that really uncomfortable because I just thought, what if some, you know, I'm Jewish. I understand where this sits and understand the kind of context of it, but I just was really aware of everyone else in the cinema. I think, what are you walking away with? Like, it was sexist, really heavily sexist in parts, and yeah, I really was uncomfortable with it. So I'd say that at the moment, Marty Supreme, I did not enjoy at all.
That's always my marrying out moment in any like film or sitcom that's about Jews. Anytime that there's this huge negativity around you're in a relationship with someone who isn't Jewish, my heart sinks. Oh, and no. I find it, you know, it's so awful that it kind of perpetuates this myth of, you know, this is the worst crime a child can commit for their Jewish parents. It pains me so much that myth is the thing that's so often grabbed by television and film.
Yeah, I remember that the first time I felt that was watching a film called Susie Gold, if you ever saw that. And it was, again, probably about 25 years ago. And that sense of, you know, we get the humour in what's happening here, but what's being experienced by people who don't live in this world and know it's a sort of joke, and also sort of not a joke, but laughing at yourself. And yeah, that sense of who is portraying what and how. And I think that question of whether it's Jews doing it or not is really fascinating. I remember there was a lot of controversy when people started getting into The Marvelous Mrs. Maisels. And it was really beloved. And then suddenly, like, hang on, Rachel Brosnahan's not Jewish. She's playing this quintessential, funny Jewish lady, empowered but complicated. And similarly, my kids actually have just discovered Friday Night Dinner and feel this is like the new family obsession. And half the cast weren't Jewish, maybe more, actually. You know, it's that sense of what is it like experiencing how we're portrayed and the tension of that.
Yeah. And David Baddiel wrote about that book in his book, didn't he? Jews Don't Count. And Keith Conn-Harris has written a lot about this, about the portrayal of Jews. And he put a beautiful book together, like also a photography book, What Does a Jew Look Like? Because of the kind of discomfort around representation of Jews on the screen. I think it's also really interesting about the British-American cultural divide. I think in America, Jewish culture is partly American culture.
New York.
So like in New York, yeah, but like also New York, but also like in films, Adam Sandler, like I think it is more baked in and understood and accepted as part of more of a general popular culture. And in Britain, it's less so in a way. Obviously, we've got that from America, because a lot of our media is American, but we are, you know, much more of a minority, particularly progressive Judaism. In America, it's the main denomination, and here we're big, but it's not quite the same, and we're not portrayed in the same way, certainly. And I think that's really interesting about seeing, and like the experience of me, for example, seeing that film in a cinema might have been very different if I was at home, like seeing it with the family within my own home, as opposed to with other people, just kind of worrying about, like, if you don't know so much about Jews and this is what you see, what are you taking away from that? If you don't have much of a, you know, a bigger smorgasbord, thinking about somebody, if you feel, of information or experiences or relationships to take in. So I do worry about that. And I also have to say, I'm just going to keep going because I'm going, I was on a rant last time and this time as well. I get really sad and frustrated at when it's only ever that we see Jews on TV or on the algorithms of Instagram, which is another form of media as well, when it's just about anti-Semitism or only about Israel. And we don't get to celebrate the mundanity, the, you know, the everyday. This is another book by Keith Con Harris, Everyday Jews, just like what it is to just generally like enjoy being Jewish and the kind of peculiarities that come with it and the beauty of it, but that we're always kind of forced in some ways to confront the darker stuff. And this week I got lots of reporters saying, you know, will you give a comment about the rise of anti-Semitism because new figures came out? And I just said no, because I don't just want to be a rabbi on the news talking about anti-Semitism. Like, I want to be able to talk about mixed faith blessings or like what Kiddush wine is like. And, you know, I don't know, like just the everydayness of it. So that's kind of what I think, that reflects my taste in TV as well, because that's what I like to be immersed in. Rant over.
Yeah, I went there for Holocaust Memorial Day. I was invited to speak at a secondary school nearby. And I started off, and I think this is actually really key for us as clergy, saying, you know, it's a privilege to come and talk to you and to talk to you about the Holocaust. But I also want you to, after this, go out and think about how Jews live, not just how Jews died or survived, right? We are a living, breathing community. That was not the end of Jewish life. And I suppose how we perpetuate that through popular culture is really fascinating.
I loved, just before, it must have been just before Hanukkah, Johnny and I sat down and watched like a really like silly rom-com that was called something like Hanukkah with Locks. And it was just, you're absolutely like archetypal man meets woman, falls in love.
Was it made by
within
Hallmark?
A Jewish setting. What?
Was it made by Hallmark?
Right. Exactly. Cheesy and gorgeous. And it was basically all about like their relationship, what they would each do for their grandparents and how much they loved their grandparents and therefore what they would do to kind of... there was a whole thing around getting candles for their grandparents' Hanukkiot who needed a particular brand. Anyway, but it was just so lovely in that you see, it's just nice and comfortable to be Jewish thing, which was being put out there. And I think I always hold on to whenever I'm seeing kind of us depicted in the news or in films or on TV in any way, there's that piece of me that's like, I can laugh at this, but I know the vast majority of people who are watching this are not Jewish. And therefore, does it make me uncomfortable what they're making from this? Mm. And I think my most extreme version of that was going to see The Producers as a synagogue trip, which I didn't know the whole cult background of The Producers. And I was kind of like so uncomfortably struck by, oh my gosh, you know, we're laughing at this. Like, you know, we're laughing at people being gay, fat, Jewish and the Holocaust. Like, this is just like every box that I'm not comfortable laughing at. And there's an entire theatre of people who, it just so happens there are a number of Jews here today because it was a synagogue trip. But on the every other day, surely in the middle of London, the vast majority of people watching it are not Jewish. And therefore, how weird does this feel that that's what people are laughing at?
I had that feeling in Leopoldstadt, play that was out sort of 5-6 years ago, which wasn't a comedy. And I think that, you know, that difference of laughing at this stuff and actually having that public debate, even presented historically. And I wonder where that line gets drawn in acting, because clearly we've got lots of great actors who aren't Jewish playing those Jewish roles. You know, there's a lot of debate about people taking on identity in acting and whether it's, you know, should it be more authentic or is it acting so it doesn't matter? What do you guys think?
Well, big shout out to the Mormons, I think, at this point, because the Book of Mormon, like, I mean, you know, the fact that they advertise in their brochures and on the buses is just like awesome. I think it's their way of being able to say, if you're going to laugh at us, we're going to make this publicity for us and, you know, have every respect for that. But knowing that there's no way the Book of Mormon would be such a success and out on the West End stage if it had been about a different religion.
And yeah, I felt like the Book of Mormon was actually laughing at everybody of faith in a really equal-handed way. Like, obviously, they're laughing at Mormonism as well and more. But actually, it's anyone with a faith is laughed at. And then also lifted up to a place of joy and comfort. And actually, we all do this and it's really nice and it's a human thing that we do. Why are we laughing at these guys?
I don't mind, like, in and of itself, the satire and laughing at and, you know, opening up Jewish. I want people to know Jews. I want them to. I think what I care about most is that people understand there is a diversity to who Jews are, not only progressive, but Jews of color, Jews who have disabilities, Jews who are secular, like that we are really multicultural and distinct in lots of different ways from each other as well. I want that lifted up. I also don't feel so strongly about actors or producers or directors having to be Jewish, actually, because I also think allyship and having people who understand Jews, get to know Jews, as long as we're kind of part of the conversation and part of the creation. I remember we had Ridley Road came to my old synagogue and they filmed in the synagogue. So I was kind of backstage helping with the rabbi who doing their blessings for the Torah, actually was Jewish, but had done it a long time ago. So I was there in the background. It was great. And Eddie Marsden was one of the characters, or the actors, and he was gorgeous. And I actually got so much, I don't know what the word is, but pride and happiness, nachas. Knowing that he was nachas. I was, yeah, really feeling the nachas, that he wasn't Jewish, but he obviously had a really good understanding of Jewish community and identity and was delighted to be able to like shine a light on this particular part of British Jewish history. And that I found beautiful. So like, I'm not so tribal that I only want Jews playing Jews, because I think we are quite, you know, we're a body that is of a people that is like, you know, wildly different from each other. I don't mind so much, but I do mind how it's done, I think is what I'm saying, about like who's represented, what stories are we telling alongside each other feels more important to me.
You've reminded me of a script I was sent about 15 years ago from Holby City. And they asked me to consult on a Jewish storyline to see if they were getting it right.
So cool.
And were the prayers okay? They wrote a character, a Jewish mother, that could only be played by Maureen Lipman. There was nobody else that could play this character. And it was such a stereotype. I mean, like, she was literally walking into the hospital room and trying to shove food into people's faces. And, you know, I'd never read anything like that. And they did tone it down on my feedback. But that sense of, like, we do have these archetypical motifs. You know, the Jewish mother is a big one that, maybe, you know, Maureen Lipman and David Baddiel are kind of our telly Jews in different ways. But how we get to that representation is really tricky, because when we're such a small community, when people see these little snippets, they associate it with the whole. I remember there was a great TV show called Around the World in 80 Faiths. Did either of you catch that one? It was an Anglican priest who went on a sort of pilgrimage for the TV show to visit 80 different rituals, celebrations, faiths around the world. You know, they went to Japan and they went to Bhutan and filmed these incredible, amazing moments. There was an Ethiopian Coptic thing. I mean, it was just incredible. And I loved watching this series. And then they got to the Jews and they showed Purim in Jerusalem. And like, you suddenly realize everyone's going to think Jews spend their time in fancy dress getting completely wasted. And that's how we do religion. And it's just because Purim is the only time you can film.
But isn't that the same as what every person of all the other faiths was thinking about their representation?
Absolutely. And it made me realize.
Right. It's at those moments. I remember even at school in RE lessons where we'd be learning about Judaism. And at those moments, I'd cringe because I'd realized that all the stuff I'd been learning about other faiths I was learning about in the same way as Judaism. So when I learned about it in Judaism and I was like, oh, this is a bit wrong and this is not really how you pronounce it and this and that, I was like, oh, but that's now how I've learned about those other faiths, which is why, you know, like you were saying about going into schools, I feel so much that obligation still, that when people ask me to go into schools, I still do, because especially in North London now, there are so few Jewish kids in so many of those schools that if I don't show up and show them that this is what I look like and this is how I've pronounced the word Torah or whatever it is, like however well our teachers are doing, it's not their faith often that they're teaching about, and therefore we just need to go and put a little bit of a stamp on it.
Yeah, it's so interesting though, because I was thinking, Debbie, when you were talking about around the, I haven't watched that program, Around the World in 80 Faiths, that I think I'm quite a critical watcher of TV. I'm always aware that what I'm watching is edited, that it is for a particular purpose. I think I'm quite like, I'm a critical reader. I'm quite a critical watcher. And with Gabriel, I will always say, like, have a look who's represented here, like not Jewish or otherwise, but like who's missing from this room, who's missing from this scene. So I try and teach him to be a critical watcher as well, which he can get a bit annoyed with. But I think, because I've been saying, oh, I get worried about what other people think. And actually, I think, am I doing a disservice then to people who are watching TV? Like, are they really going to see like one depiction of a particular type of Jew on TV and think that's Judaism? Because I would know I wouldn't do that if I saw a particular depiction of a Buddhist, for example. Maybe that, you know, I've got some obviously religious knowledge, but at the same time, like, I don't take for granted what I see. And I take my media in, like, I watch some really great Jews on social media, like Rabbi 360. He's great. And Miriam, who does an amazing Daffy or Me thing, like I and lots of other people from different echo chambers. So like, I know that's just only one thing. So surely a lot of people also, we should give them more credit.
But how many times have people very innocently said to you, oh, you're Jewish, you don't look like a Jew, or you don't look like a rabbi, or you don't. Now, that is just a very natural way of saying, when I've seen images of Jews, they don't look like you. Or when I've seen images of rabbis, they definitely don't look like you. So however much we think we're being critical, like there's an element of, okay, like I can see that this is the person being depicted. It's not everybody, but there's still a sense that it's in some way representative.
Although, as we've said before, the you don't look like a rabbi piece probably comes from Jews more as much as it comes from non-Jews in our world.
I love it. Such a compliment. Yes. I'm like, thank
Great,
you.
Thank you.
The moment people stop telling me that, like, I'll start worrying that actually, you know, I do now look like a middle-aged man with a beard. And I'm going to start shaving. Exactly.
So then let's use that to have a think about those rabbis that get depicted on TV. You know, Rabbi Greg was kind of my inspiration 20 years ago. There have been quite a few telly rabbis of late, rabbits. We had Rabbi Rebecca in You're So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah.
Who I liked
the
her.
Actress of which was recently on a Drag Race episode. So that was quite cool.
And we've all now got gym equipment in our offices at Shul, surely.
I should get on
idea.
That.
I was like, I can't believe I'd never thought of that. The mitzvah lesson on a treadmill, obviously.
And then there's Rabbi Noah, of course, from Nobody Wants This. And there was Rabbi Raquel in Transparent. That's already about 10 years ago, but it still feels quite current.
No, that was good.
How do you guys feel about those rabbinic depictions? And I also think there's kind of a shift with those depictions, right? Because those 90s characters were all very secular, kind of culturated Jews. And now we're moving into Jewish holy space in a way with media, which is quite an interesting shift.
I love it.
No,
we're
you
all
go
so excited.
No, you go first.
We're excited to talk about this because we've never interrupted each other so much on an episode. I think we're just like, and this.
We've hit our place. The telly.
The TV.
Telly.
And crumpets.
TV. TV and crumpets. Oh,
at the same time. Now, that would be a win. Life goals.
That's all I do. That's basically my life. I was going to say that I love seeing progressive rabbis on TV. I'm like, celebrate it. I think it's brilliant. I did not like Nobody Wants This particularly. And yeah, like I loved seeing a close approximation to what being a progressive rabbi is, and to see that, because don't we all want to be seen and represented? Like, don't we all want to put on the TV? I mean, that's why representation is so important, because people are missing. It's harmful, because I want TV to not only reflect the best of our world, and I also want it to shape it. So I kind of want that interaction between the two. So I love seeing progressive Judaism. And like Miriam, not with schools, but when I get asked to do anything that is representing progressive Judaism on TV and radio, when it isn't only about anti-Semitism, I say yes, because I think it's really important that we're there and we're representing. Like I did a CBeebies, this was ages ago, now about 8 years ago, a CBeebies episode at a congregant's house. We went for Friday night dinner, and I just think that's really important. So I like really celebrate seeing progressive rabbis up there doing their thing, because I hope it also shapes our world as much as it's shaping, you know, it shapes our world and it reflects the best of our world as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We went to see Revenge After the Lavoya at...
That sounds dark.
Yeah. Theatre in Soho the other night, and it was totally bonkers, a very crazy production, but we'd booked really late in the day and ended up being in the front row of this theatre. And in the show, like, is a character depicted of a liberal, feisty political rabbi who's part of a plot to kidnap the prime minister, basically. I'm sitting there like in this awkward kind of, this is very funny sort of, you know, audience moment, especially as there are only two actors in it. And when she walked out, she looked at me in a way that was like, oh no, I think she knows who I am. Like, this is weird for her to have me like an inch away from the stage. But then afterwards, as you like turn around to start walking up the stairs, you obviously realize how many Jews you know in the audience. And then they were all stopping to say how weird it was to be watching it, watching me, because actually like this depiction of the rabbi is then blurred with the rabbi that they know who's sitting right there.
That's really
so
funny.
The layers of mess of kind of how you see and how you're portrayed as soon as you then, you know, a part of that in a way as well. But yeah, I like the closest to the truth. Like when you really know someone on the inside has been part of this, someone who really gets it. So even like the choice of names of rabbis and stuff, like we're in Nobody Wants This, where they're at camp and there's this one's called Shearer and this one's like they've really know their stuff, like they're really getting it. And sometimes that can make it even more uncomfortable when I'm like, oh, I don't really want the rest of the world to know this about us. But sometimes it really adds to the humor when you really feel, wow, they've got this, they know it.
The last time I ended up in the front row at the theater was an accident. We were going to see the JW3 Panto last year. And I booked row D and didn't realise that they take out the first four rows. And we ended up
I
can't believe you booked the front row. It's so embarrassing.
We had the same conversation. I wasn't an attention seeker.
So this year,
attention seeker.
You didn't book that row. I booked three rows behind that. And the kids were like, why didn't you book the front row? We liked it there. But then I had a similar experience of being in the front row at the Jewish Panto and knowing half the audience who are now all looking at the back of my head watching me watch the Panto. Again, I think that's a really interesting cultural shift, right? It's only in the last 5 years that we've taken this really classically British institution of Panto and said, oh, let's make this Jewish. And it's so frivolous and gorgeous. I love it. I really think it's great. And so silly.
Yeah, it's a great celebration, isn't it? And yeah, and silliness and celebrating and recognising that how, again, we're shaped by the culture around us and also can shape it as well. And as we're talking, I'm also aware that when we hear Jews in the media, it often is not in a pleasant way. And it's about like conspiracy of Jews running and controlling the media. And also knowing the real hardships that people who are Jewish, who do happen to work in the media and who aren't like, you know, running it all, how they've suffered in the last few years of having work turned down, of the struggle of finding work as well, and of being in, you know, in places that maybe don't quite understand the complexity or the nuances of what it is to be Jewish, and also are anti-Semitic. And this is kind of interesting because we're talking about, which is right, we're celebrating and enjoying the characters that we enjoy and thinking, you know, critically about who's represented and who isn't and who's making these things and whether Jews, you know, are involved or not. And also there's this overlay of Jews in the media, this global kind of conspiracy, and then the very real difficulty of being Jewish at the moment working within media. We've all seen the stories of like comedy shows cancelled or venues cancelling certain productions and people because of just because of being Jewish, and this overlay of Israel on top of it, which is also it's a kind of reality, a darker side, isn't it, in reality to all this stuff.
And Jewish friends of mine who work in media particularly have talked about sort of keeping a bit quieter actually about the Jewish stuff now and not wanting to suggest stories that have that angle or not wanting to expose themselves. It's a really interesting one. Like, you know, I think there are outlets that get a reputation in the community. You know, everyone says at the moment, you know, this outlet is really anti-Semitic. But then I hear Muslim friends saying that the same outlets are Islamophobic. And most of what they're saying is about Israel and Palestine, actually, right? It's around how is that one particular piece of news depicted.
Yeah, and the kind of the opposite end of the spectrum where rather than trying to keep a low profile, you then find yourself working in those spaces and feeling you have to be the ambassador. So you're always then the Jewish voice and you're saying, well, you know, we can't use this language or we shouldn't say that. And feeling that sense of responsibility of kind of, you know, this is not meant to be my job. And yet I feel such a layer of responsibility to advocate for my community in this space.
Yeah, so exhausting, isn't it? Like on a very small experience, I was like, I remember like about 6 months ago, I was in the car, school run, and I put Radio 4 on the way home, just wanting to hear the news. And straight away, it was just Jews. It was Jews, Jews, Jews. And it was not good Jews news stories. It was tricky ones. And I had to turn the radio off. I was like, I can't do it again. I can't hear and have to be on the out, you know, listen out for how is that said? Is it said correctly? Like who's having this conversation? Who's left out the conversation? It can be really exhausting. So I think that's why I lean into even more celebrating all of these just normal Jewish characters on our TVs when they pop in. And when we don't necessarily, we're not in your face, this is Jewish, like somebody feed Phil where we started. Like, it's great because he's just being himself and it's not all about being Jewish, but it's also super Jewish. I love that kind of thing where it's just, it's there and we can kind of celebrate it. But it definitely can be quite exhausting, this stuff of trying to deal with it as well.
My son this week was had written an English essay and he'd had to take an extract from Elie Wiesel's Night and kind of unpack it as a literary piece and see what literary devices the author had used. And he wrote something in it about in the monologue, the rabbi's monologue, you can see that although he'd had his head shaven and number tattooed and that everybody was dressed the same and he'd had everything removed from him, that he was not interrupted during his speech, because in the past, the rabbi has been seen as a character with such status that that status could not be removed from him. And therefore nobody interrupted, even when they were all equal as inmates in the concentration camp, which I thought was a really wise and like insightful, you know, in seeing in this text. But I was like, what do you mean in the past rabbis were seen as people with status that you couldn't interrupt? You're still not meant to interrupt the rabbi, which he didn't agree with and left as, you know, only historic rabbis are the rabbis you can't interrupt. Modern day rabbis, apparently we can.
Which seems like a really fantastic place to start winding up, because we've interrupted each other so much today with so many times.
So
go on, Robin, what do you want to say?
No, I was just agreeing with you. I was interrupting and agreeing. I know Rabbi Lev calls it constructive interrupting. So it's like building upon it. But
I mean,
sorry,
it's how Jews talk, really.
It is how Jews talk. This is very real representation.
Although I saw
Producer
advert.
Dan.
I saw an advert this morning for some grammar app that or language app that teaches you better vocab. And one of the things it...
You've got perfectly good vocabulary,
Thank
Debbie.
You
don't need it. Don't worry.
It wasn't targeted advertising, hopefully. But what was fascinating was one of the things that it said you need to look for in if you are a person with poor vocabulary and poor communication is interrupting others. And I was thinking, oh, isn't Oops. That just Jules? So with that little stereotype to leave us on, yeah. We love hearing from our wonderful listeners. Let us know what TV you think we should be watching or what TV.
And now you know it's you can't get a word in edgeways because we all interrupt each other. It's not just because you're listeners and you're not making the podcast.
Yeah, we just haven't.
It's just because we haven't got space for you in the podcast. But now we're making space to hear your voice.
And we do love hearing from you. We find your messages are so encouraging and wonderful. But we're also happy to hear what you've hated too, or what Jews on representation you've hated. Miriam looks very sad now.
Yeah, not what you've hated about us, we should say. What you've hated on. We only want
Don't
to hear good stuff
hate.
About
Sorry.
Us. Yeah. But if you want to be constructively, you know, negative about TV shows, that's fine. We can take
it. It's like
that.
They say at the end of shows, like The Producer, if you've loved it, tell all your friends. If you hated it, tell all your enemies you loved it. You can be in touch at rabbiting_on_podcast on Instagram, where you can comment or message us. We want to say a huge thank you to Shoresh and to Progressive Judaism for helping this be a reality. We're now halfway through this season. Can't believe it.
Wow.
So yeah, we're trolley. No, that's what am I talking about? I'm starting to lose.
Who are we trolling?
To speak. Sorry, producer.
Don't admit we're trolling people, Debbie.
No, don't say that.
I think I meant strolling and it came out wrong. We're strolling through
we're
the
trolling.
Series. Oh my
Just
Lord.
To clarify for our listeners, Rabbis Miriam, Debbie, and Robin are not trolling.
I need to sleep.
Some sleep. It's nearly Shabbat.
See you.
Bye.